This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 26, Zircon.
Your muscle composition does not support sustained sprinting. Negative impacts of proceeding may be compounded by your recent infection.
I know.
Despite her warnings, Vel continued to run, full tilt, in pursuit of the owners of those many footprints. Boots and dress shoes were mingled with hoof and paw prints, and Amy was highlighting each one. Following the largest set, twisted human-like tracks the size of trash can lids, he confirmed they were all headed in the same direction. When he had realized the kids had been kidnapped by a band of monsters, he begged Amy to flood his body with adrenaline and restrict the buildup of lactic acid as much as possible. He knew he would regret it later, but if it got him to the kids, he'd suffer the consequences with a smile.
Just monitor my vitals and tell me if something important starts to go out.
For a long moment, there was only silence between them. He was just about to thank her for accepting his terms when his vision flickered off, then back on, and his leg muscles began to seize up. He pitched forward, shouting out a slew of curses as he braced for impact. He hit the ground hard, rolled down a short embankment, making sure to bounce off each rock and gnarled root before landing painfully in a shallow ditch. He lay there, struggling to return breath to his lungs before Vel managed to push himself to his feet. He let out a long groan as he forced his body back into a jog. He was definitely going to feel that later, but he had to press on. The kids were out there, and it was up to him to rescue them. Refusing to let his mind wander into the what-ifs and other dangerous thoughts, he spun around, looking for the tracks. He could only see the largest of them now, the dirt trail having dried up in the baking sun. He followed them, paying closer attention to his body.
Amy, are you all right?
Critical errors building. Operations temporary stabilized, but system failure is imminent. Safe mode reboot is suggested if you want to live long enough to find the kids.
Soon.
Vel swallowed his fears and put on a burst of speed.
I promise. Just keep me patched together a little longer.
His voice was laced with anguish, and by the lack of her response, he took that to mean she understood and accepted. That, or he was about to experience another blackout. Either way, he had to hurry. His long strides brought him to the end of the tree line, and he spilled out into a fairly sizable dirt road. The grooved tracks in the mud spoke of a highly trafficked route, and the trail ahead led straight up to a weathered village. A handful of gray wooden structures poked out of the hills, inviting him in. He grit his teeth, readying himself for anything as he continued on.
If the inhabitants are unfriendly, sieging the main thoroughfare may be unwise. Perhaps stealth would be a better approach.
Amy had a point. He was alone and probably outnumbered. Vel glanced back over his shoulder, only to remember that he had abandoned Pyra and Ondine in the woods almost immediately. He slowed his pace. If things went south, it would be some time before those two caught up with him. He shook his head to himself. Time was simply not on his side for him to hesitate his actions now.
I was never really a stealth guy anyways.
He lurched back into a full tilt run, throwing caution to the wind. Find the kids first, then deal with the other stuff after.
As proven by your wardrobe choices, red is a horrible camouflage color.
The single dirt road branched out into all directions, leading off into a denser forest or spiraling throughout the town to head north and south. He had just paused, deciding on which way to go, when his vision flickered again. His functions remained stable, and he sighed with relief. He chose a well-worn path and took off once more, hoping this would lead him where he wanted. The trail had thinned as the owners spread out through the town. Judging by the number of prints leading away from the downed airship, their captors would likely need somewhere large to hold them all. They'll begin scanning his surroundings for anything that would accommodate such a group. Pens or stables, maybe even a large structure. As he ran, he caught sight of many curious onlookers. Bustling wasn't the right word, but he had drawn the attention of several work crews as he vaulted over their carts filled with lumber and supplies. Vel even had to duck out of the path of a burly, ogre-like creature as it hefted logs onto another wagon. He saw large, colorful men with huge tusks hoisting water barrels towards the well, and nearly collided with an orc as she slung bags of rice over her impressive shoulders. This was a village full of monsters, but there were humans, too. He frowned. Slaves? No, they did not bear shackles or the look of servants, but he pushed that to the back of his mind. He had no time to ponder it. As Vel reached the center of the village, he skid to a stop where the muddy road opened up into a large town square. He could see no sizable animal pens, only a handful of chicken coops. And, as he sniffed at the air, all he got was the pungent stench of unwashed bodies and animal dung. The only sounds that reached his ears were those of the workers and crickets.
"I know, what's the rush?"
Panic was replacing the adrenaline in his body, and Vel almost missed the voice that spoke to him, but not the hand that grabbed hold of his left shoulder. Reacting purely on instinct, he snatched the wrist of his would-be assaulter and spun. An old human man was staring up at him with a filth-stained, gap-toothed expression of pain and worry.
I was just...
Black flickered through Vel's eyes. And, acting of its own accord, his metal arm flung itself to the side, taking the stranger with it. He managed to open his grip before he seriously injured the other man, but the force still sent him to the ground, calling out in pain. He backed away as several angry shouts arose from the newly formed crowd. Vel didn't give himself a moment of hesitation and tore off down the nearest branch in the road before the others could reach him. As luck would have it, a large building, a church, came into view. It was easily large enough to hold 100 people, at least. He bolted over a small stone berm and up a slippery slope towards the chapel. Given the state of it, the village inhabitants must have held it in high reverence. It was clean, with a fresh coat of paint and glimmering stained glass windows. He bounded up the steps and through the large, steepled doors, slamming them shut behind him and forcing the drop bar into place. As fists began to pound on the wooden doors, Vel stepped back. They would hold for now, but as more bodies piled in, he didn't know how long he'd have. He turned, his eyes finally adjusting to the dim, candlelit interior. All the pews had been moved or reused, and 24 rough cots lined the walls, each one filled with an injured body. Nurses and doctors rushed about, and mingling in between were the lost and the haggard from the recent events.
"Piper! Atticus!"
Vel stepped down off the threshold and scanned over every head. Most of the cots were filled with human bodies, but there were also trolls, goblins, and even a handful of dark-skinned people with dappled skin similar to Pyra's. None of these people were from Avis, judging by their plain clothing. He sighed and called out for the kids once more, his voice losing some of his conviction.
"Oi!"
A hulking creature, covered in fur and sporting a headful of horns, stood from where he sat at a woman's bedside. He brandished the spoon he had been using to feed her and aimed it at the intruder.
"This is a hospital. You can't just barge in here screaming and scaring folk. Leave."
"I'm sorry, I'm a..."
Vel stumbled back again, his eyes scanning across the inhabitants. He squinted between the partially bandaged and unconscious bodies before looking back at the Minotaur.
I'm looking for someone. Have you seen...
Black waves rocked him, and Vel dropped to his knees on the wooden floor. But he could make out the banging on the doors as it reached a peak. Someone had driven a spear through the gap, dislodging the drop bar. A tiny figure rushed forward.
You okay, mister?
The darkness cleared from his vision, and the ruffled hem of a gown came into focus. A frilly, pink-sequined dress, so gaudy the light that caught it hurt his eyes. A garment he would recognize anywhere. Vel's heart lightened as he let a brief smile form on his face, an emotion that was short-lived, however. His eyes landed on a female goblin, holding a tray of clean bandages and staring at him with a concerned look. He tried to push himself to his feet, but his body wasn't responding. In barely a whisper, Vel asked,
"Where did you get that?"
The Minotaur plucked the tiny human off the floor.
I told you to get out.
Vel shoved the beast off and rounded on the goblin.
Where?
The tiny goblin let out a squeak of fear, threw her hands into the air, and tossed the tray of bandages to the ground. She bolted behind the nearest body to hide as the doors finally burst open. Agitation flooded Vel's system, causing his thoughts to become hazy. Without looking, he spun and let his fist fly at the face of whoever was dumb enough to attack him first. His mechanical knuckles connected with the face of that imposing female orc from earlier. Her head snapped to the side, and she responded by turning to face him slowly while popping her jaw back into place. With narrowed eyes, Rassizi spat out a tooth with a growl. Panting with the effort to keep up with her guardian, Pyra pointed at the village ahead.
Is that... are we in Oxhand?
The dryad nodded.
It looks that way. And Vel, when charging in there, we need to warn... Oh no.
The two slowed to a jog that then became a walking pace as they neared the back of a loud, angry mob just outside the old church. From the doors, the crowd began to part as two figures forced their way through.
Ow, 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 stop it!
Rassizi ignored the protesting half-elf as she hauled him outside by his ear. Spotting the queen at the back of the crowd, the menacing orc dragged Vel forward before planting a boot in his backside and propelling him towards her.
I don't know why you all are back so soon, or why the prince is attacking my crew, but control him or I will have Grunch sit on him.
Vel stumbled, sliding a few feet in the mud, but managing to keep his balance. He spun on his heel, the metallic plates of his arm bristling.
Where are they? Where are... Wait, when did you start talking again?
Pyra halted Vel's attempts to advance on the orc by placing her hand on his forearm, lowering it as she stepped around him.
Stop! They're friends!
She watched a ripple of pain shudder through him, and he nearly collapsed at her feet. But he stayed his action, and she returned her attention to the general.
And this isn't Prince Varin. Can't you see that?
Growling, Rassizi squinted her already narrowed eyes even harder, until they were but slits on her face.
He's not.
She dug a hand into the leather pouch at her side and pulled out a pair of spectacles that were little more than scrap iron, twisted to hold thick panes of glass.
I hate these things. They make me feel stupid.
She slid the frames onto her face and blinked several times, waiting for her eyes to adjust. When they did, she returned her attention to the man she assumed was the prince.
Ah, I see. More
duplicates. Just what we needed around here.
She pulled the spectacles off her face, clicking her tongue in annoyance at the Queen.
So it wasn't you who left with Varen a few days ago?
Vel's eyes widened, and he could feel an involuntary twitch start rippling up his mechanical arm.
Was it a girl that looks like Pyra? A young man with a floppy hat and a large metal robot, ogre, golem?
Yes, that sounds like them. I was a bit preoccupied with the new band of mouths to feed.
Assisi pinched the bridge of her nose.
Are they safe?
Vel clenched the spasming arm with his left hand as black flickered around his vision.
They left with the prince and his diminutive mentor.
System corruption detected.
Are they safe?
Rassisi narrowed her eyes.
Yes, as far as I know.
As he struggled to control himself, Vel dropped to his knees in the mud, pain rolling through him.
Amy, initialize safe mode.
Restarting in 3, 2, 1, 1.
Like someone had flipped off the sun, everything around him went dark, and Vel barely felt his body hit the dirt. There was a prickling sensation in the flesh portions of him as his nervous system was shut down. He swam in darkness for several moments when there was a chime against his ears, and everything clicked back on.
Vel.
Pyra, now kneeling at his side, tapped at his cheek in concern.
Are you all right?
Groaning, Vel pushed himself into a seated position. The loss of his AI turned his body into lead once more, and he could feel a throbbing pain in every muscle.
Yeah, I'm fine.
He rubbed at the sore spot in his chest as he looked up at the orc.
The kids. You say they left a few days ago. Do you know which way? And could you lend us some horses?
Ah, you're an odd one.
Rassisi sighed as she reached down to help the man to his feet and pointed off the way he had come.
They headed off that way, but I don't have any spare animals for you. They are all in use for the rescue effort.
She gestured around the village and at the few remaining onlookers.
We are spread too thin to help you more than perhaps a small bag of supplies, but luckily the road to the tower is well established. You should encounter few dangers on it.
Pyra raised an eyebrow.
Tower? They are headed for Elias.
A firm grip tightened around Vel's lungs, making it difficult for him to breathe. The last time Elias had been around the kids, he had nearly killed them all trying to get to Atticus. He jammed a hand into a pocket of his coat and pulled out the portal locker, but frowned as he realized that, without Amy's help, he was unlikely to figure the damn thing out. Rassisi frowned, squinting and leaning in to get a better look.
Where did you get that infernal device?
Vel looked up to see the orc staring at him with concern, or was it trepidation?
You know what this is? Can you use it?
She shook her head.
Nope, but anything written in infernal can't be good.
Infernal?
The runes on the twisty bits there.
She pointed at the rotating rings near the base.
It's from the infernal plane. Not many can read it because it's more than just a language.
Pyra furrowed her brow.
I've never even heard of it, and my people trade in languages.
Yeah, but you don't trade with imps.
Akkos!
Rassisi turned, scanning the thinning crowd.
Akkos! Get over here!
A smile wormed its way across her face as a tiny, high-pitched yelp responded to her. She glanced back at Pyra.
Akkos might be able to help him, but in the meantime, I'll escort you to the infirmary.
Confused, the queen blinked down at her broken arm, then back up.
This? Oh, no, I'm fine, thank you. My injuries have already been treated.
Rassizi raised an eyebrow.
You mean to tell me your arrival has nothing to do with our latest caravan of refugees?
What do you mean?
From the south. Your mother arrived just this morning.
Blood seeping from a wound on his forehead mingled with the sweat that stung at Eric's eyes. He tried to wipe it away with his forearm, but the slumped figure he was holding aloft prevented even that. His exhausted muscles cried out in agony as he struggled to drag a semi-conscious Elias down a narrow gap behind a large factory building. His legs shook in protest, and he let out an uneasy breath. He looked over at his current and rather unhelpful captive, the Prince.
Do you know how to get out of here?
Eric kept his voice low to avoid catching the attention of anyone nearby. He was fairly certain the swarming crowds were just terrified citizens, but there was no point in tempting fate. Varen spat out a mouthful of blood and scowled at the doctor, offering him a malcontent shrug of the shoulders. How was he supposed to help? Even if he hadn't spent the last several minutes struggling to free himself from his shackle, he didn't know this city. Releasing a wail of frustration and agony, Eric slumped forward against the cool brick of the building, giving himself a moment to rest. Things were not going the way he had hoped. From the moment he and the Arcanist had stepped into that room, they had unwillingly triggered a terrifying trap and were now on the run from soldiers and monks. He froze when he heard the rhythmic sound of boots echoing off the dusty cobblestone. They were not actually hidden from sight, only shielded by the long shadow of an architectural design of the building. They were less than a dozen paces from the street, and this patch of darkness was not likely to protect them for long. He turned to the Prince, offloading Elias into his arms.
Here, take him.
Varen took a hasty step back, shaking his head with a sneer. He would be more than happy to be caught. Despite his previous treatment at the hand of the Brotherhood, he trusted his actual brother even less. Eric cursed and slumped Elias against the wall, who quickly slid into a heap. As the footsteps grew closer, he plucked up the first thing he could find, a busted doorknob, and brandished it as a weapon. An elderly woman shuffled into view, and she spotted the man wielding something in her direction like a knife. She dropped her basket of canned goods and ran away with wide eyes, screaming in terror.
Were you planning on stabbing an old woman with a doorknob?
Eric had just exhaled a breath of relief when that voice caused him to all but jump out of his skin. He spun around to see the harried face of the king's bodyguard, Tragedy, staring at him with a lifted brow.
Of course not!
He blinked several times before tossing the bit of rubbish back into the bin where he had found it.
And where the heck did you come from?
You weren't exactly hard to spot.
Theodore pulled a face.
Once a big portion of the city evaporated, I figured you lot couldn't be far off.
He placed a hand on one of the factory doors and pushed. The wooden frame splintered easily, opening up into the black interior.
We should probably get off the street. In.
He gestured with a nod of his head.
I'll grab Elias.
Eric pointed at the Prince.
You! Help him carry the king, or I'll have him do to you what he just did to that door. Got it?
Varen clenched his jaw tight, that hard scowl never leaving his face. He didn't want to go through with whatever plan the doctor had schemed up. He wanted to make sure the kids and Evan were all right. But he doubted he could take on Eric with that shadow creature fueling his strength, let alone the two of them. He obliged with a silent grumble, but the pale man didn't even notice his help. Once inside, Theodore deposited Elias onto a moth-eaten sofa and pushed the Prince down beside him. He turned to Eric as he gathered his thoughts.
All right. I have just one question. What happened to you lot? Why the hell did you take an airship back into the city? Where is the mage?
He sucked in a deep breath before adding,
And what's our next move?
That's 4 questions. Eric slumped against the wall, finally able to run the back of his hand against his forehead. He wiped away the blood and sweat before he found his words.
We were just supposed to be sneaking into the city to find someone who could help me with the math on my time travel question.
Time travel?
That's 5 questions.
Eric pushed his cracked spectacles up the bridge of his nose.
It should have been an easy milk run. Pop into the college, find the kid, get my answers, and get out. But apparently,
he threw his hands out.
The Brotherhood was waiting for us, and Elias here...
His hand moved to gesture at the king, who was still slipping in and out of consciousness.
Lost his mind and flew us straight into enemy fire.
Theodore ran his hand through his hair, processing the absurd tale.
Okay. Is that why you look like you lost a fight with a motor car?
That's 6, and stop interrupting!
Eric picked up a forgotten porcelain cup and heaved it at the far wall, watching it shatter as he vented his anger.
The school, and this one here by proxy,
he gestured to the prince,
was a trap set for Elias and probably me. Blow up the entire area and bury our charred corpses beneath the rubble.
He paced, stomping back and forth across the office.
They waited for us to show up, so they must have been watching somehow. Then enough gunpowder was detonated to level the entire building. If Elias hadn't shielded us, I don't know. I don't think they counted on his bond with Rivaria being so strong, but they came close to succeeding anyway. And in the chaos of everything, I lost sight of Atlas. I don't know where he is.
His anger finally fizzled. Eric slumped into a squat and pushed his fingers against either side of his head, massaging at the throbbing pain.
I'm no closer to finding this supposed genius kid, which does not bode well for reality as we know it.
Genius kid? Do you mean Atticus?
Theodore looked down and away. If that was true, that could cause issues with Danny and Chester, and he needed his sister to trust him, at least until she was safe. He looked back at the doctor.
Yeah, I suppose he would be the one to ask about something like that.
Across the room, Varen let the others' continued conversation fade away as he turned to look at his brother. Eric had said the connection to Rivaria had strengthened, but Elias looked weak, like wet paper, ready to rip at the slightest tug. Months had gone by since he last saw him, but now, sitting here lethargic and weak, he barely recognized the man. He was pale and sweaty, his hair disheveled, and large white scars had been carved up the length of his forearms and neck. Varen grabbed one of those arms, turning it over to see the scars were like vines, curling in and wrapping around his body as if something had sprouted from within him. If this was what it meant for Rivaria to strengthen, he didn't think his brother would survive much more of it. In response to the gentle touch, Elias stirred. He struggled to open his eyes, blinking in the dim light. There was quiet in his mind at last, and, even though he felt physically nauseous and drained, there was a peace he hadn't felt since his time on Avis. A face stared down at him. He knew that face, but from where he couldn't remember. His mind was struggling to recall, but it was like a dream, wispy and ephemeral. His eyes traced the contours of the chin, the familiar cheekbones, then landed on the long, thin scar over his left eye. A memory sparked.
Varen?
The prince blinked down at his brother as he dropped the man's hand. Those icy blue eyes were staring at him through a half-lidded gaze. He lost track of the years spent cowering in fear at the mere mention of his brother's name. But now, sitting at his side, he pitied him. His weak smile turned into a frown as Elias leaned in closer. His brother was covered in blood, with several gashes on his arm still bleeding and a dark bruise over one eye. He reached out, using his thumb to clear some of the red from his cheek.
"Did Lucian do this to you?"
He wiped away more blood from his brother's face.
"I've told you not to trust him. He always does this."
The gentle smile returned to his face.
"Don't worry. I'll tell Father it wasn't your fault."
Varen's heart sank into the depths of his worn soles, and his breath hitched in his throat. This was his brother, thrown back to a time before the endless fighting and wars, before that dark seed in his center corrupted him. He nodded, stifling back the tears that were already burning his eyes as the king slumped back into the cushions, dipping into unconsciousness once more. Rivaria was not in control. Like the day his brother had been exiled, the day he stole his voice, Elias must have used so much of her power to rescue them that the old deity within was drained. Varen's breath quickened. Perhaps that meant he could be saved. But did he deserve to be? The sound of someone flipping a desk drew his attention back to the others.
"Look, I don't know what the next plan is. I can't move forward without this kid. I can't fix anything if I don't have the right equation. And then we're all doomed to be the center of a multidimensional black hole."
Eric kicked at the papers that had scattered across the floor.
"Well, we can't stay here forever. They'll figure out soon enough that you ain't in that rubble, and when they do, this city will be razed to the ground as they try and find you. We need to regroup and formulate our next move in some place safe, and no place is more fortified than the Infinite Tower. Let me worry about Atticus. Finding him shouldn't be too hard. My father basically considers him family."
Theodore clenched his fist, wincing slightly at the pain it caused.
"But you throwing a baby fit won't help us none either." "No."
Eric took in a deep breath through his nose, closing his eyes as he forced himself to calm.
No. What we need is a distraction. Like you said, they don't have all the facts right now. Once they realize we are gone, any operation is going to come with increased risk. We need something big to draw their gaze while we find this boy."
His eyes drifted over to the king.
"We need to let Rivaria loose on the city."
Viren's eyes snapped up in alarm, and he lifted his hands to respond, but tragedy spoke first.
"Are you insane? Do you have any idea how many people would die, Elias likely among them?
And if I don't set things right, then everyone dies anyway. With the right motivation, Elias could level this city if he wanted to. He's the perfect distraction."
"No."
Wraith had sat silent long enough.
"You are supposed to save people, not hurt them."
Eric waved off his shadow bug with a flick of his wrist.
"It's the most logical solution."
"I won't let you do this. It is wrong."
Eric felt that telltale pull on his shade, and his body lurched into motion without his say-so. His feet moved of their own accord in a clunky, stomping gait. Wraith had taken control of his actions and was marching him straight for the door. Eric bore down and resisted, sending himself stumbling into the wall.
"Wraith, stop it!"
"Not until you listen to me."
With an odd sort of spasmodic lunge, his hand shot out, grasping the doorknob. Eric fought to keep his wrist from turning and exposing them to the soldiers he knew were probably patrolling not far away. He clenched his eyes shut, and with great effort, blocked the two-way connection the shadow bug had to his shade.
Come on, buddy. It's not like I want to hurt anybody. I'm not the bad guy, but we have to do this. Stop fighting me!
Wraith felt the barrier slam into place. It was a wall, blocking off the free-flowing energy between them. For the first time in over a year, he was alone. Eric stood, finding his body once more under his own control.
Trust me, I... The doctor stumbled forward, screaming as Wraith tore visible chunks out of his shadow, shredding into the man's soul with razor-sharp teeth. He may just be an incorporeal spirit, but he knew right from wrong. He would make his friend listen, one way or another, and he sunk his claws into the shade. In desperation, Eric flung open the block he had placed between them and reached through. It was a two-way street, and he had learned how to dip into his shadow bug's soul just as efficiently. A heart-breaking shriek erupted in his mind as he bore down on Wraith, pulling energy out of him like a battery. Stop fighting me!
Something hard slammed into the back of Eric's head. Stars popped in his vision as his face hit the ground, and his hold on Wraith slipped free. Dazed and confused, he rolled over in time to see the prince tossing a broken chair at Tragedy before diving towards the king. Viren threw his arms around his brother, struggling to haul him up and towards the door. They just had to make it to the street, and maybe he could explain everything. His hand stretched for the doorknob, when it was suddenly yanked to the side. The chain, still connected to his wrist, went tight and hauled him backwards as the pale man reeled him in. Holding the chain in one hand, Theodore rolled his eyes and reached down to haul Eric upright with the other.
Nobody is going on a rampage.
He turned back to Varen.
And you can't rescue your brother by handing him over to the people who just tried to kill him. Honestly, it's like herding cats with you two.
He dropped the prince's chain, then set Eric on his own feet an arm's length away.
Let's forego using anyone as bait and just leave the city while we still can.
He turned to the doctor, narrowing his eyes.
Then you sit in the tower while I find a way to bring you your little genius to help with your homework. Fair? Or do I need to convince you?
The bodyguard's words fell flat against his ears as Eric stared down at his numb fingers. His hands tingled like they were plunged into ice water. What had possessed him to think exorcising his friend was the answer? He collected his breath and his thoughts and straightened up. He locked eyes with Tragedy and nodded.
Fine, you're right. Let's get out of here and head back to the tower.
He turned to the prince, but an apology never formed in his mouth. He couldn't be sorry for something he had no shame in suggesting.
One last thing.
Theodore didn't move.
I need to ask for a favor.
What?
Eric's face pulled into confusion.
Of all the times you could ask for something, now is really not the most convenient moment to leverage a raise.
I need you to open a portal to another realm, one without magic, so my sister and I can go through.
Theodore didn't hesitate with his ask. He wanted to make sure the doctor understood, plainly and fully, exactly what he wanted. He held up his arm, displaying the spreading crystals along his skin.
It's important.
Eric rolled his eyes and waved the bodyguard off.
How about we worry about fixing reality first? When we succeed at that, you won't have to worry about escaping to another world.
His mouth formed a line when Tragedy failed to move.
You were the one insisting we go to the tower, so... How about you pick up the king and lead the way?
He shot a glance over to the prince.
And as for you,
I know you want Elias back to normal. Help me, and I'll make sure he gets fixed. But try something like that again, and I'll have old Frowny Face here rearrange your limbs. Theodore stared daggers at the doctor for a long moment, weighing his options. But in the end, he decided that it wasn't Eric he needed to convince. They both knew the king was the real power in the room, and Elias owed him more than he could ever repay. He plucked up the man off the ground and flung him over his shoulder like he was nothing more than a slumbering child. With a final glare at the others, he turned for the door. As soon as he was alone, Eric looked down at his shadow.
"I'm sorry, buddy. I'll make it up to you, I promise."
Tears stung at his eyes while he waited, as long as he could, but there was no reply. He sighed and followed the others. He would fix this. He would fix everything.
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron, in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Jeffrey, Jeffrey, I have need of you.
Yes, Mom? How may I be of service?
There you are. I'm afraid I misplaced one of my hand mirrors back in that dreadful room the Prime Minister forced us into. Be a dear and fetch it for me, will you?
But, Mom, the building exploded.
Yes, and?
Your mirror would be... Do we really need to go over this again?
I do not appreciate your tone. Now march in there, Jeffrey, before I ask again.
My name isn't even Jeffrey. It's John. You'd think you could remember after 5 years.
Excuse me?
I must have been insane coming back to work for you. The dragon was bad enough, but now this. I quit. To heck with the lot of you. I'm leaving. For good this time.
Why, I never...
Wait, what's that? Oh my god!
Yeah.
My word, is that a bear?
This is why I hate the ground. Too many pets.
Let me back in.
Oh. Any chance I could have my job back? Again?